Welcome to the Sadler Lectures podcast. Responding to popular demand, I'm converting my philosophy videos into sound files you can listen to anywhere you can take an MP3. If you like what you hear and want to support my work, go to patreon.com/sadler. I hope you enjoy this lecture. At the beginning of Book 11 of his City of God, Augustine of Hippo is providing us with an interesting explanation for why what he's calling a mediator is needed. And a mediator for what? Ultimately, for understanding the existence and nature of God. For Augustine, that's also going to involve understanding a lot of other things besides just God, as if that was just a small thing. The relationship between God and the world, human history, all of these sorts of things are going to fall within that scope. And here he's providing an account which doesn't say, well, you can only learn about God through scripture alone. He does hold out the possibility of some sort of natural human knowledge, that is, by using our natural faculties of reason and intellect to rise to the understanding of God. But he thinks that that's going to be fairly rare. So there is, you could say, some scope for philosophy understood in a classic sense as, you know, this love of wisdom, and in the modern sense as a discipline that has disentangled itself from other disciplines, such as that of theology, to have a scope, to have play in these questions. But it's also possible for philosophy to be in some respect or in some manners aided by what we would typically associate with religion. So let's take a look at what he actually says. The fundamental question is, how do we know about the existence and the nature, that is, what God is like, of the divine? And he says, it's a great and very rare thing for a person, after contemplating the whole creation, corporeal and incorporeal, to pass beyond those and to rise to something higher than that. Now notice that he says that this involves not just looking at the visible or bodily corporeal aspect of the created world, or even if you don't want to accept it as a created world, just say the universe, right? Simply studying physics or neuroscience or biology or whatever it is that you want to study alone would not get you to this point. You also have to study the incorporeal and to, you know, because it's incorporeal, invisible world as well. So you would have to engage, say, in introspective psychology, which is something that Augustine himself does. Now, through doing this, through passing beyond the created order, one can reach, as he says, the substance of God. And when you do that through contemplation, through, that is, the use of our faculties that we've been given, reason, intellect, however else you want to understand it. And now notice what he says in this case. This is not merely a grasping on our part as the agent of a passive object. It becomes a relationship. It becomes a dialogue. He says, learning from God himself that none but he is made all that is not of the divine essence. And then he's got a little bit of reflection here about how God would speak to human beings. And that's worth looking at. He says, God speaks to a person not by means of some audible sounds dinning in their ears with atmospheric vibrations or anything like that. Not by these, but by the truth itself. So in our intellectual grasp of truth, using our faculties that are part of, you know, our endowment as creatures, part of a created order, we're able to engage with the truth itself, which is not a passive thing or a relation, say, between thought and reality, but is the reality itself revealing itself in an active way to the person. So he says, he speaks to that part of the human being which is better than all else in the human being, and that than which God himself alone is better. So he talks about this as well as how we're created in the divine image, which is something that you find in the book of Genesis and then, you know, mentioned at many other points in the canonical scriptures that Augustine is going to be talking about. This notion of being created in the divine image is not unique to Judaism and Christianity. You'll find the Stoics also referencing something like this, a part of ourselves, the highest part, reason, the rational part, is a part of God and alike to God. But this is a very important idea. And so Augustine says, that's perfectly fine. That's open. That's a possibility. Philosophers or people who want to engage in philosophy can, in fact, if they're conducting their minds properly, attain to God without any sort of scriptures, any sort of priesthood, any sort of rituals. It's perfectly possible. However, while that's true, you might say, in the abstract for most people, it's not true, or it's not possible, rather, in the concrete. Why? Because we're damaged, screwed up human beings. And this rational or intellectual part of ourselves has been darkened. It's been misshapen. It's been led astray. And he attributes this in large part to what we can call the vices, to all sorts of things like pride or greed or lust. And we could go on and on and on talking about examples of that, but it's not really necessary. His point here, as he says, is this higher part, reason and intelligence, is disabled. And it's disabled from what? Not only from enjoying the divine, which is what you would attain if you were having a clear sight, according to Augustine, of the divine, but from even fully understanding it. So for many people, this approach is, at least for the moment, closed off. Although it's not closed off for everybody. And Augustine is offering the possibility that some people, and we can call them philosophers if we like, were able to do this. So what can we do in that case? This is why he brings up the notion of a mediator, an intermediary. And notice how the mediation is taking place. It's not simply like a game of telephone where you hear what the one person has to say and then you say the same thing down the line. Of course, the message gets garbled along the way or anything like that. Instead, it's about a relation, something that is actually ontological, something that changes the fabric of the created order as well as representing a new way of understanding the divine. So he tells us that truth itself, God or God's Son, and for Augustine as a Trinitarian Christian, these are of course going to be the same. In this man, Jesus mediates, as he says, between God and human beings. How does this happen? So he's got a very interesting and short discussion of this. He says he takes on humanity without thereby losing his divinity. So he becomes, as in traditional Trinitarian theology, he becomes the God-man. Or if we want to avoid the, you know, sort of gender exclusive there, we can say God-human. He becomes Theos Anthropos, right? He becomes this bridge. And Augustine has this really nice sentence in here, which I've depicted by drawing this sort of arrow between human and God. The human being is aiming at God as his or her end, as their goal. And there's a lot of different ways this could be parsed out. Happiness, knowledge, wisdom, all of those sorts of things, a renewal of themselves, moving away from vice to viciousness, however we want to frame it. The human being is aiming at God. What allows there to be this connection between the human being and God is the God-human, which uses the human as a means to reach the end of God. In this case, the human in question is Jesus. Jesus is being used as a means, as a mediator, as the thing in between to attain that end. And here, you know, you might think about means and ends brings to mind that, does the end justify the means? Well, yes, in this case, completely, and justify in more than one way, but it is also the means that's justifying the human being in a different sense, making them right, making them able to reach God, the end that they have in mind. Now, Augustine goes on to talk about revelation in different forms. So he says that this mediator reveals the truth about God first through the prophets, and then through Jesus himself and what it is that he has to say, recorded in the things that his followers write down, but also presumably in how they behaved and interacted, the things that they didn't write down but remembered and put into play. And then through these apostles, people who are going around and preaching the good news, and eventually through the scriptures being canonized, being brought into a canon or a rule, and a rule not just for this is what counts as official stuff, but a rule for practice, a rule for what it is that they would do. So for example, there's a book that is in the canon for, you know, everybody from Catholics on eastward, including the Orthodox and the Oriental Orthodox churches, called Sirach, and that's a book of wisdom. It's also called Ecclesiasticus, meaning the church book, because it was used as a rule for practice. Very much, you know, set of philosophical discussions in there, practical philosophy, and that would allow the human being to understand God, right? So the last thing that he talks about is the need for some sort of testimony, for some sort of informing process or witnessing. And he says the things that we're being given in order to help us reach God are the things that we need to know but can't figure out on our own. And you might say, well, you know, when I read scripture, there's a lot of things in there that are pretty common sense. Well, might not be that you need to know that thing. Could be that somebody else needs that as a reminder, right? It's not necessarily all tailored exactly at one individual, but it's supposed to be providing a basis that could be used for understanding that. So Augustine will go on and he'll make a sort of a fortiori argument. That is an argument saying, hey, if you're going to say that this is, you know, valid in this respect, then it's even more valid in this respect. He talks about things in the world, things that are visible, things that are corporeal, things that we can touch and smell and taste and hear. And he says, there's a lot of them we can learn from our own experience, right? I mean, if I'm wearing clothes or not, I don't need to ask somebody else unless I'm, you know, blind or in some sort of really strange condition. I can just look down. Yep, dressed today, not in that dream where I don't have any pants or anything like that, right? But there's a lot of things where we routinely rely on the testimony of others. Why? Because it's natural. We can't see the whole world. We allow them to tell us things, and you know, sometimes they lie to us, or they're misinformed, or we don't fully trust them, but in many cases we do, and we couldn't actually get by in the world if we didn't. So he says a little bit later, accordingly, as in the case of visible objects, which we've not seen, we trust those who have. So in the case of things which are perceived by the mind and spirit, which are remote from our own interior sense, it behooves us to trust those who have seen them set in that incorporeal light or abidingly contemplate them. Now, what is the implication of that? How does that affect all these other points that we've been talking about? So there's really two ways to get at the truth about God. One is through our own contemplation of God, and if we can do that, great. We might also rely on other people who are able to do that sort of thing, and perhaps they can give us some useful guidance or information about that. Or we might go to the mediator, who is there specifically for that role and provides some way of making it past our own screwed up intellect so that we can properly understand these matters that have to do with the incorporeal, but incredibly important, at least in this perspective, divine. So for Augustine, this is the account of why and how we need and rely upon or use a mediator to get to God.
Special thanks to all of my Patreon supporters for making this podcast possible. You can find me on Twitter at Philosopher70, on YouTube at the Gregory B. Sadler channel, and on Facebook on the Gregory B. Sadler page. Once again, to support my work, go to patreon.com/sadler. Above all, keep studying these great philosophical works.